Hello, Simon Dowling here, and welcome to Teaming with Possibility, episode 13. Hey, I was having a chat with a client a couple of days ago, a coaching client, and I asked them how their week had been, and they responded by saying, well, I've had 3 days in the office and 2 days at home, so I've got 2 days work done. And we both had a bit of a laugh about it, but when you sit back and think about that statement, you think, gosh, if there is a kernel of truth in that, do we have a problem? Of course, teams and teaming is a great opportunity for us to be able to achieve more together, to be able to achieve collective success, to harness the collective genius of many people. But, teams can be noisy places. They can be places full of distraction. You can be sitting there at your desk and be constantly bombarded with requests for assistance. Have you got a minute? Quick questions, being asked to attend meetings. And of course, that doesn't just mean physically. All of that could be happening virtually as well. Even though my client said I got 2 days of work done by being at home, of course, being at home doesn't stop you or protect you from all of those distractions. In fact, there's an argument to say that over the course of the pandemic, where most of us were forced to work from home, it became easier and easier to be distracted no matter where you were, as we became more and more comfortable with using technology for constant communication, whether that was video calls, whether it's chat functions, whether it's any kind of collaboration tools. And so we are constantly drawn into collaboration. But at what cost? That's what I want to have a little conversation about in this episode today. And for those of you that are first-time listeners to Teaming with Possibility, a big welcome. Great to have you here. For those that are joining me, having heard and tuned in before, welcome back. So good to have you back here. And as always, the invitation is to reach out to me on my email at which is podcast@simondowling.com.au, podcast@simondowling.com.au. This is episode 13, and this is, in fact, the final episode of season one of this podcast. I feel like a baker's dozen is a good number to play with, so we're going to take a short break before we come back with season two. I'm going to do a bit of planning and thinking about what season two might look like. So I'd love to hear from you for your thoughts about that. Collaborative overload. Have you heard that term before? I think I've talked about it on previous episodes. It's a really well-researched phenomenon, particularly thanks to the work of Professor Rob Cross over in the US. And Adam Grant has had a lot to say about this as well. Collaborative overload is essentially this phenomenon that we end up spending a huge percentage of our time and day under the demands of collaboration, whether those are meetings, whether those are requests for feedback, whether those are requests to complete 360 degree feedback surveys, whether those are just spontaneous conversations. The cost of this level of collaboration is quite clearly, as we see in the research, diminished productivity. People are taken away from perhaps their core focus areas, the key pieces of work they have to deliver on. But because of that, you know, the bandwidth, the energy being taken away from that, that in turn creates higher levels of stress. So the need to be able to get more done within a fixed period of time, and ultimately brings with it a real risk of burnout, that we are so invested in giving ourselves over to others, to helping others, to being able to meet multiple requests in a fixed period of time, that ultimately we just burn our candle out. We run out of energy. We run out of collaboration energy, and we've got nothing left to give, which is a real danger. And look, my take on this, speaking very much from personal experience, we become and can become so busy bouncing from one request to another that we become, it's not just that our tank becomes empty, we become a little disconnected from ourselves. We almost stop having to think about what matters most to us. We stop having to think about what we need, what's important, how we want to prioritize our work, our own choices we might make, even our own sense of agency and the ability to control and shape your day, we become completely disconnected from that. And when that happens, I mean, the irony of that, of course, is that we can feel, for a period of time, we can feel like we're completely on fire, we're in demand, people need us, I'm being useful, I'm being helpful, I'm being valuable. But all of a sudden, we hit this moment where we realize, but I'm not necessarily making progress or achieving the things that I know I need and want to achieve in order to be successful, in order to be making meaningful progress against my own goals, in order to be able to do the work that I'm doing, but to do it really well, to be able to have made a meaningful contribution, to be able to have really invested of myself, to have been creative about it. And so the busier I become responding purely to the demands of others, even though for a period of time that can feel like I am successful, I am busy, I am popular, I am in demand, we hit this point where we suddenly realize, hang on, I'm not achieving and making progress against my own needs. And that sense of being busy, 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 that's where burnout can begin. Being so busy responding to others that you forget to look after yourself. You forget to meet your own needs. You forget to make progress against your own measures of progress. I was slapped in the face the other day by a post I saw from Adam Grant that came through my LinkedIn feed, and I've got it printed out here. He wrote in it, a busy life, perhaps you saw this, a busy life is not a symbol of status. It's a symptom of trying to do too much for too many people. A full calendar brings a surplus of stress and a shortage of energy. Reflecting and relaxing should be top priorities. Unscheduled time isn't wasted, it's invested in well-being. And I think the slap in the face there was, you can have a diary that is full of helping other people, but ultimately, what's the long-term cost of that? Are you going to be able to help others for the longer haul if indeed you are becoming disconnected from yourself and running your own tank dry? And I think this is a really important conversation for us to be having, not just as individuals. Like, you might be sitting there going, to what extent do I relate to this? To what extent do I feel like I can spend all the fuel in my tank responding to others and then all of a sudden feel either burnt out, disconnected, bored, uninspired? But I actually think, and this is where I wanted to focus today, it's a really important conversation for teams to have. Because the busier a team becomes, I think it's critical for that team to have a conversation about how do we tame the beast of collaboration that risks becoming over collaboration. How do we manage the flow of energy, of creativity, of passion in this team so that we don't deplete our own reserves? We're, as a team, a group of individuals who all have our own needs, our own priorities, our own ways of recovering, our own needs in order to be able to show up really well at work. And I think it's up to a team to understand that there's a delicate puzzle to be worked out here, and that is finding a way to understand what those various needs might be and how we can help each other with those. And that, for a team, comes down to a conversation about boundaries. The boundaries we set for ourselves collectively and the boundaries we encourage each of us as individuals to set for ourselves. Boundary setting. And this idea of boundaries, perhaps there's two types that you might be thinking about in the context of your own team. The first type I want to talk about is collective boundaries, which is the boundaries we create that are, if you like, agreements between all of us. They're boundaries that represent how we preserve our collective energy and needs so that we can do our best work, not just today and tomorrow, but for the long haul. Because most of us as teams are really running a marathon, not just a 100-meter sprint. We've got to be able to perform for the long haul, not just, you know, one foot in front of the other perform. I mean, perform with flair, with innovation, with creative thinking, with resourcefulness, with energy, with passion. And that stuff requires us to look after our own energy reserves. So collective boundaries might be questions around priorities. What do we choose to give our energy to first and above all else? What are our top three deliverables this quarter? The things that we really have to get right, and we have to do them really well. And if ever those three things feel compromised, then we should feel okay about calling it out. We should feel okay about saying, hey, I feel like my energy is being drawn, or my time or my resources are being drawn in one direction, and that is now depleting from one of the key projects that we have on our cards right now. One of the most common concerns expressed within teams is that we are trying to do too much for too many different people. And as a result, I don't know where to focus my energies. I don't know when it's okay to say no to something. I don't know when it's okay to say, you know what, I'm happy to help here, but to a point, up to a point. I can't overservice things that are low priority. And so we stretch ourselves incredibly thinly, and as a result feel busy, but without any meaningful sense of progress. So being able to set priorities is perhaps the most important way of clarifying boundaries. What are the must achieves? What are the must delivers this quarter? What does success look like above all else? If you're not having that conversation as a team, then the whole platform for this idea of boundary setting is like jelly. You're standing on something without any firm footing. Off the back of that, the question might also become, how do we track how busy we feel at any one team? Do we have a way of measuring that? I worked with one team that has a thermometer that they use. Temperature settings, you know, they've got hot. Hot is, you know, we're running too hot right now, where there's just too much going on. We're all feeling stressed and under pressure. Moderate energy is, that's kind of where we like to be. It's warm, it's comfortable. And then cold is, look, we've got space in the system. No surprises, they don't often run to cold. But when they talk about running hot, what becomes really important at that moment is to revisit priorities. Have we got our eyes on the prize, people? And then the second one is, are we looking after ourselves while we run hot? Because the real danger when we run hot is that we just dig deeper and deeper and deeper into reserves until we run out of not just resources, but energy, care, passion. People start dropping. And it's in that context that part of managing energy is a conversation that makes it okay in the team to know, when are we taking breaks? How are we looking after ourselves? Are we taking our lunch breaks? Are we getting home at a reasonable hour to spend some time with our families? Are we getting some exercise? All of those things, which will come down to the individual. Every one of us is different. But making it okay as a team to respect and acknowledge some of those boundaries that help us to manage those things. If this hot period looks like it's going to go on for a month or two, are we scheduling in some rostered days off? Are we scheduling in, you know, some half days, half Fridays off, so that different people can take some time to rest and recover? The metaphor here, it's a bit of a cliche, right? But it's a really useful one, is thinking of a Formula One race. Formula One is all about getting around the track as fast as possible in the shortest possible time and beating the other cars on the track. But every Formula One driver builds into the system, every Formula One team builds into the system the pit stop. It is a false economy to try and keep, you know, driving around that track, keep pushing the pedal to the metal without also building in some time to recover or to take care of yourself. And sure, they have worked that out to a T in terms of efficiency, but you don't skip them. And I think the same is true for a team, to say, how do we build in pit stops? What does that look like? That might also mean, as a team, setting some rules around communication. So, you know, one of the things that I think really went a bit skew-iff for a lot of teams over the whole period of lockdown, working from home, was communication limits. People started sending emails, sending messages on Slack channels or whatever communication means, setting up Zoom calls, sending text messages at all kinds of weird hours, because people were working at times that suited them. But then, of course, what that can very quickly do is snowball into this sense of obligation. Like, if someone's sending me a message at 8 o'clock at night, they're expecting me to respond at 8 o'clock or not at night. Or even if they don't expect me to respond, I feel like I need to clear it. I need to respond now so that it's not weighing on my mind overnight, or so that it is not something that I start my day worried about. People like to clear the decks. So thinking a little bit about how do we avoid that phenomenon in the context of our teams might be about setting some explicit rules, some parameters, using in your emails the system that allows you to write an email and schedule it for sending, but don't actually send it yet. Some teams would, you know, often put qualifications in their email signature saying, I send emails at odd hours, but I don't expect you to respond. I'm not sure that's enough. I think it needs to be a written or a spoken conversation first, but even better, find ways to hold off the actual sending. If they don't need to have received it at 8 o'clock at night, if you're not expecting them to read it, is there a better way that we could go about this? Do we have days where we say it's meeting-free Mondays or meeting-free Fridays or Friday afternoons are completely meeting-free or whatever it might be? No meetings before 11 a.m., one team that I work with, because we assume people need to come in, make some meaningful progress in the morning in order to top up their tank and feel like they're on top of things. Let them do that. Let them do some good work before we start pulling them in to collaboration and conversations. So all of these sorts of things, you know, what the exact boundary is kind of doesn't matter, so long as you are reaching agreement as a team about how do we avoid overtaxing each other on the collaboration front. So that's collective boundaries. The second type of boundary to be thinking about is individual boundaries. And this is still a team conversation, but it starts with a more individual reflection. The individual reflection is, what do you need in order to be at your best, not just today and tomorrow, but for the longer haul? If you're going to be busy for the next 3 months with lots of work, lots of demands, we have ambitious goals as a team, the question for each individual in that team is, what do you therefore need in order to be at your best and to be able to be fully resourced to do that work well? And I think a team needs to invite everyone within that team to ask themselves that question and to make it okay to be a little bit selfish about this, because this is a space where people can feel like, oh, well, you know, who wants to know about the fact that I like to go for a run every day in order to be doing my best work? That's a bit selfish to want to talk about that, isn't it? Everyone else is working hard. Well, what if that selfishness is completely appropriate? It's appropriate because what it enables us to do is to rely and depend on each other to, when we do turn up, to be firing on all four cylinders. So asking each individual in your team to reflect on maybe a few different types of boundaries here. One is energetic boundaries. What do you need in order to be able to perform to your best level of energy? So someone in the team might say, well, for me, that is about, wherever possible, I like to preserve the first few hours on Monday to be able to hit the ground running, develop my plan, get some momentum up before I start getting drawn into different conversations. So as much as possible, I like to keep my Monday mornings free. Or someone else says, I like to go for a run or a walk every lunchtime. So I'm going to at times, you know, ask you, do you mind if we avoid a lunchtime meeting or a lunchtime conversation? Or my invitation to the rest of you is, come on a walk with me at lunchtime. Let's walk and talk. Let's sit in the sun. Others might say, energetically, what I need is, in order to perform to my best in a meeting or a conversation, I need time to think in advance. So send me some preparation notes and I will be absolutely rocking it when I sit down to talk with you. But give me that advance notice if you want to get the best from me. So these are kind of energetic requirements, energetic needs, energetic boundaries. That then flows into the second kind of personal boundary, which is time boundary, which is, where do people need to draw themselves boundaries on time in order to manage all the competing commitments in their life? So for example, part of my responsibility is to complete board reports and they are due at the end of each month. So I like to keep the last 2 days of every month as free of meetings as possible. I ask people, if possible, are we able to respect that rule? Or someone else might be saying, I pick up my kids from school every day. So I leave on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays. So I leave at 2:30 and I'll be offline between 2:30 and 4:30. The key here is allowing people the voice and the space to talk about, to name these things with each other and to put them on the table, not as, you know, whether you like it or not, here's the situation, but to put them on the table as kind of invitations to say, can we talk about how to work with this? Because of course, the bigger your team and the more of these kinds of needs and requirements that end up on the table becomes more and more complex in terms of how do you meet these. But it's a great starting point. It's like, you know, the mise en place in a kitchen, all the ingredients being assembled to say, now, how do we make a dish here of respectful, empathic boundary setting in this team? Do we need to, in fact, create a wall where we chart these, or a Trello board where we chart them? Or is it enough to simply have a conversation like this and capture them in a document so we remember what they all are as much as possible? And then the other piece around this is, we talked about energetic boundaries and time boundaries, but the other is kind of cognitive and emotional boundaries, which is a little similar to energetic. But this is more about, well, if you want to get the best result from me, or you want me to participate meaningfully in any kind of collaborative process, then this is how you get the best from me. So if you want to give me feedback on a document, deliver the feedback, give me time to process, and then I'll come back to you. So I just ask that you be okay with giving me a bit of space. Or if you've got concerns with the way something's going, I much prefer it if you come and see me or pick up the phone and just have a chat about it than sending an email, because it gives me a chance to ask you some questions. So I respond much better to face-to-face communication. Or if you, a bit like the example I gave before, if you want me to participate meaningfully and respond to a question or give you some input to an idea, the more you can give me advance notice of the question, or you can be really clear about what you need or want from me, then I can contribute to that in a much more meaningful and valuable way. So those sorts of boundaries are ways of helping people to identify the boundaries of how we best work with each other and how we best contribute to the team dynamic. So all of this comes down to the gentle art in teams of understanding each other's needs and making it okay to talk about and identify those needs with each other. In fact, more than okay, I'd almost go so far as to say the reason burnout happens and the reason we over-collaborate is because we assume it is not okay to say no sometimes. It's not okay to set some boundaries. It's not okay to say, I'm not available to participate in the way you're asking me to. And because we assume it's not okay to do that, it's too selfish to do that, everyone just either cooperates somewhat begrudgingly or until their tank's empty, or even worse, engages in what's recently been called quiet quitting, which is we start to try and hide, find ways to not be drawn into collaboration, but so quietly it's a kind of form of passive aggression. Perhaps the most obvious example might be to not answer your phone when you're working from home, to not show up to meetings, to hide in the cubicle in the bathroom, whatever it might be, but essentially to disengage completely. And that would be the worst kind of scenario, because at that point there is no explicit conversation about what we need from one another. So making it culturally okay, acceptable, the norm for people to talk about this stuff is, I think, a real asset in any team. One final distinction in this is probably that there is an important distinction between what you could call soft boundaries and hard boundaries in this. So as we talk about boundaries, some things are hard boundaries. In other words, they're kind of non-negotiable. So for those to work, typically what I should probably do first is get them clearly agreed with my own boss, my employer, the manager in the team. So hard boundaries might be, listen, part of the deal here is that I work 4 days a week, which means I'm not available after 5 o'clock on Thursdays. The hard boundary is, do not expect me to respond to emails after 5 o'clock on a Thursday, or when I'm picking up my kids between 3 and 4. Do not expect me to be able to participate in anything during that time. And that's an agreed term of, you know, agreed condition of me joining here. It would be a very rare exception that I could break that. That's a hard boundary. Whereas a soft boundary is one that says, listen, this is the need. Here's how I best protect that. I understand, though, I'm in a team of 8 people, 10 people, so there's going to be times where I need to flex on that. But can we start from the assumption that we're trying to maintain those soft boundaries? So they're flexible, but that doesn't mean they're just an easy give. And I think that language can help a team too to distinguish the kind of levels of need that we're talking about when we talk about boundaries. So there we go. What about you? What comes to mind for you when you think of these boundaries? Is it easy to have this conversation as a team or hard? Do you start from the language of what each of our needs are in order to perform to our best? Do you start from the language of how do we control the collaboration beast, tame the over-collaboration beast? Do you start from the assumption of how do we make sure that we're all giving our time and energy where it's required at any given moment? And if so, have you had this conversation as a team about what those boundaries might look like and how do you manage them? Would love your feedback, would love your thoughts on any of that. I hope this is useful. And if nothing else, if it's not a team conversation yet, make it one for yourself. Where do I need to draw some boundaries right now and hold space for my own, you know, energy, the ability to rebuild my energy, rebuild my focus so I can show up in the best possible state at work? There you go. Great to have you along. And it has been a lot of fun playing with you across season one of Teaming with Possibility. I look forward to seeing you very soon when we come back for season two. Bye for now.